Okay, so I forgot to record like the first 2 minutes of this episode. So I'm faking it right now so that we can lead into when our guest starts talking. So just pretend like this is not a mistake and I didn't screw anything up. Can you do that? Can you do it for me? I'd appreciate it. Let's start the show.
You've just entered the law offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. If you've come for actual legal advice, you need to turn right around, honey. You need to get out of here, because you ain't gonna get none of that. They quibble, and they squabble, and they bicker. But if you want to hear meaningless opinions, this is the right place. They got plenty of that. Stuff that makes no sense at all. They go off on tangents. It's crazy talk. If that's your thing, keep listening. They'll keep talking.
Oh no no, oh no no, it's another episode of the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker. You've entered the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker!
Welcome back to another episode of the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker on this February 3rd, 2021. Today we have somebody who goes beyond the term legendary. We call him mythological. This is Leland Sklar, who is a one of the most prolific bass players of all time. He's played on over 2,600 albums in the music business and over 25,000 recordings in and of themselves. So that's incredibly amazing. And first question I had to ask of him, and well, by the way, our client for today are Furry Faces and Flipping Fingers, but we'll get to that later in the show when I remind everybody that I forgot to mention the client of the show. So without further ado, Leland Sklar is going to talk a little bit about one of the dangerous things that the most dangerous things that happened to him while he was performing. So
Outdoor
here.
venue and it's raining and the chance of getting electrocuted is I mean from a serious standpoint, yeah, there's been a few times where I've been knocked on my ass on stage by bad grounding and some water got on stage and walked up to a mic and it arced and boom, down you go. It can be real scary. Or we've had pieces of staging fall, like a light fall from a piece of rigging and from 20, 30 feet up in the air, that could be pretty dangerous.
I heard the guys in Air Supply are pretty tough customers. Did they ever threaten you? Did you ever feel scared being around them?
No, I could care less. They're a bunch of pussies. Nothing scares me. Well, everything scares me, but I just put up a good.
Sorry, I just got stunned because it looks like the people who are going to be working my yard just showed up, which means that I have the potential of having lawn mowing going on while
Oh,
this happens.
it's great. It's so great to have the sound of blowers and weed whackers going,
And meat
Well,
chewing.
it's one of the reasons why I wear a headset as opposed to having a regular microphone is because of that very potential problem. So hopefully a lot of that noise will get filtered out. So I understand that you grew up in, did you grow up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or you just were born there and moved at a young age to California and then.
Yeah, I was born in Milwaukee.
Uh-oh.
A little over going on five. I was like four and a half when we moved to LA. My dad got offered a teaching job. He had a lot of different jobs back in Milwaukee, but one of the things he did was he was a high school teacher, and he got offered a gig out here and took it. He got offered two gigs, one here and the other was in Hawaii. But back in those days, Hawaii was like so remote that he decided that LA would be the place to stop.
Man, you could have lived, grew up in Hawaii.
Yeah,
That kind of
yeah.
sucks.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I think he has the opportunity to go to Hawaii whenever he wants to now, Greg.
Not well, not really.
Who's going anywhere anymore?
Right.
Yeah.
And
That's a good
I'm
point.
lucky to I'm lucky to get to the store, you know?
I'm just happy to get to the bathroom.
Well, it seems like you've got somebody in your room there that might prevent you from getting there.
Yeah, what's the story with the creepy guy behind you?
He's encouraging people to wear their masks, so he's got his wrecking crew mask on. because Denny Tedesco is doing a documentary film about our band right now, and he did the Wrecking Crew movie, so I got some swag off of him. But I had a Santa outfit on him at Christmas. I don't know, you know, it's just, I'm in a room full of crap here. This is such a catch-all. And this is where I do all of my stuff from. So kind of anything can happen in here. I find rodent droppings and things.
So you're like Larry, in a hoarder's paradise, perhaps? Or?
Yeah. It's
when you were a little kid, Larry, did you like already know you were going to be a musician? Like when you were the little tiny kid, were you always into music? Like when you were five?
Well, first off, I'm Leland, not Larry, but I don't want to.
Did I just say Larry? I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay. I kind of like Larry. I think I'm going to change my name. When I was a little kid, my parents used to watch the Liberace television show. And I watched it with them, and I became absolutely enamored with piano and with kind of the whole panache of what Liberace did. I mean, he was certainly the precursor to, you know, theatrical Elton and, you know, any of those kind of artists. But in those early days, he just sat there in tails, had a candelabra on the piano, and his brother George would come out and play violin. And we had a baby grand piano in the house. And I started plunking around on the piano when I was five and immediately had an affinity for it. And so my parents found a teacher, and I began studying. And by the time I was eight, I had won some awards from the Hollywood Bowl Association and met Eugene Normandy, who was the conductor of the Philadelphia Orchestra, one of the great conductors. And I was really pursuing piano as a career, not as a career, but as my passion.
Right. Would you dress up fabulously like Liberace when you were eight? Would you dress up all amazing?
Oh, yeah. I had some protective garments on that were pretty stylish.
Like rubber diapers? Protective garments?
Yeah, I mean, the rubber came later. I started with latex.
Okay. I know where this interview is going today.
All right. Here we go.
It'll get worse. Don't worry.
Oh, that'll make it get better.
But it was one of these things that when I entered junior high school, I assumed I would be playing piano in the orchestra and all that. And the music teacher, when they started divvying up seats, said there was plenty of piano players, but they needed a string bass player. And I volunteered. He pulled out an old K upright from the back room and put it in my hands, and I just held it against me and plucked a note and felt that vibration. And I was really ready for a change at that point. I was pretty stressed with piano by the time I got to that point when I was 12. So he gave me some rudimentary lessons, and I fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with bass, and then started, you know, getting legitimate teachers. And that became, I never thought I'd have a career in music. It's one of those strange things. I was always in bands, always playing lots of club gigs and stuff. But somehow, you know, when you're that age and you talk about music, like every one of your parents' friends goes, is he ever going to get serious? Is he going to get a real job kind of thing? And nobody ever really thinks about music as a profession.
And this is like back in the 1950s, right? Early 60s?
Yeah, early 60s.
Okay.
Late 50s, early 60s. Because I'll be 74 in a couple of months, so that sets my time frame.
Gotcha. What about the bass as an instrument really moved you? Like you really settled into that particular instrument?
I really, especially when everything changed for me dramatically, like so many other players, when the Beatles hit the scene. Because I was not really a rock guy, I wasn't a surf guy, I wasn't into Elvis. It was really classic and jazz was all I was really into. And the Beatles came, and that was a quantum change in my life. But as I focused on it, I really liked the psychology of the bass. I really liked the responsibility of it, where generally you're not the front guy. You can step up to the front, but then you go to the back with the drummer, and you're in your own little bubble back there while the singer, guitarist, keyboard players are generally up front. And I also really liked the position that you occupy as a bass player between rhythm and melody. And you can really craft and dictate where songs are going to go just by changing a root note or a rhythmic thing. So it just appealed to me. I've never played guitar. I just don't really get it. It's too small, too close, coming from upright. It never felt right to me.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
But I just really, I really liked, you know, psychologically what the bass does. And I just was really happy to stay there. I didn't think it would be my, I always thought it would be my avocation rather than my vocation.
So what would your vocation have been if it wasn't for the bass? Where was the plan taking you?
Well, when I got to college, I just spent my first 2 years in college in the music department at Valley State College or Cal State Northridge out here in LA. And I just didn't like it. They were more interested in grooming you towards being a teacher than a performer. And I thought, if I'm going to play, I just want to go out and play. So I went up to the, up to the administrative building. My highest aptitude was in science and art. So I started focusing at that point on, I was thinking I might become like a technical or a medical illustrator, something like that, because I still am very passionate about science, and I've always been involved with art. So I really kind of thought I was going to be going that way, and that I would just, you know, always be in bands and play with friends, but look for a legit job in maybe one of those fields. I also was interested in oceanography, and I was going to apply to Scripps down here, Scripps Institute of Oceanography.
Oh, oceanography, because I heard something different.
I was also staying, you know, keeping my student deferment going during Vietnam, because I really had no intention of doing something I didn't believe in. So, you know, so college was really kind of an oasis at that point. So I just kept studying and taking classes.
So eventually you had like a double doctorate because you stayed in school the entire Vietnam War.
I never graduated. You know, that was the weird thing is, you know, I've somewhere in a filing cabinet somewhere, maybe on microfilm or something, I've got like 250 or 300 units worth of classes. but I kept changing majors and changing, you know, I would find classes I didn't like and I dumped them and take stuff that wasn't part of my curriculum. Just because I really love, if I had been born wealthy and I could have done it, I would have maybe been a career student and still be in school, because I just love the atmosphere of academia. So, I would have enjoyed that. But, you know, reality, you know, set in. You have to pay the rent and all that stuff. So things change. I love looking at this one window here. All I see is ceilings and... I see the top of a head every once in a while. There you
are. Yeah, just ignore me. My phone is bad. I have to hold it up to my ear. Sorry.
Greg is part of the Blair Witch Project, and so occasionally it's like he's running from something.
Yeah.
Matt, I'm running from Air Supply.
To digress, I think we just need to get Greg a really cool, like, screen thing, and then we don't ever have to watch...
Or we just take a picture of his face and stick it on his ceiling so that at least his phone.
I'm about to throw a pinata
of me. A Greg pinata.
Yeah, Leland, it does have kind of a Blair Witch Project effect after a while, because you're just sort of like disoriented, like one of those found footage movies. You're like, whoa, where am I going? And his head pops up like that.
I love a well oiled machine, and this is. This is a Swiss watch here.
Yes. Well, we have a few arguments regarding technology, but Greg's still trying to figure out how to connect his cups and string to his telephone so that other people can hear him clearly around the corner.
It's tough for me. I don't understand these modern concepts.
I could continue on my diatribe, but if you want to ask a question and then we'll continue on.
Well, I had a question because you were saying that music would have been an avocation instead of a vocation. So have you flipped it? Do you now like do you on the side as a hobby do medical illustrations and work in oceanography just as, you know, for the heck of it?
No, I, you know, there's a part of me that really would love to have done that. But when music actually finally started happening, it was the most ferocious schedule. And I kind of thought, you know, over the years that by the time I got to this age, I mean, most people I know, like their dads that were in like legit work were retired by this point and off playing golf and fishing and doing whatever they do. And until the pandemic hit, I mean, I've been busier than I've ever been. So I really don't have time for, I would consider that leisure things if I was actually still drawing and sculpting and doing it. I'd love to get back to it at some point, but my main focus still really is music at this point.
But you still have like hobbies, because I saw a video where you were actually, I think, using scissors to clip your lawn. Like
I'm pretty like, anal.
Wow.
Like the grass has to be perfect in certain areas.
Well, certainly the edging, you know, I've got a big piece of property and it's kind of, you know, like a wild English garden, but like where things are edged, I want them really right. I mean, if you go around with like a weed whacker or something, it just tears it all up. So I've got a good garden clipper and I just get out there and man, it's just, I zone out. It's zen to me. It's like, it's my kind of like my tranquilizer. You know, I go out there and just can, you know, forget about everything and just get into that.
So it's not like you see a loose blade of grass and you just start getting really, really angry that it's growing where it's not supposed to be growing. And you start screaming at the grass and then you like attack it. It's more of a
stomp the crap out of it. it's one of those things. I'm pretty ADD, ADHD, and all those alphabetical maladies, and so I can get really focused on like weeding and things like that, and make sure there's no roots left or anything in there. And 8 hours can go by pretty quickly with that.
And you also have, I think it's a Model T hot rod that is another one of your. Is just the one that you have, or do you have a multitude of these hot rods?
I used to have a bunch of cars, and I realized that it's really a rich man's sport, and they were all suffering from neglect because I just couldn't do all of them, and I couldn't have them indoors. I had a hot rod is in a garage, but everything else was under covers and stuff. And I'd go out and check them out, and there would be like mildew starting to form on the interior, and I finally said the hell with this and sold everything. And I have the hot rod here, but that's the only thing I kept out of the whole bunch. That was the first one I got.
But you're able to keep that inside, so that makes it easier.
So it's protected, and it is.
Well, it's in his house. What?
It's in the living room.
No, of course.
It's a hell of a scary ride. You know, anybody that goes for a ride in it, it's a white knuckler, that's for sure, because it weighs about the same as a smart car and it has 1,000 horsepower.
So you could go into orbit.
You could not get a straight pin up your butt. Your sphincter would be so tight.
That's Greg's dream, actually.
Yikes.
It's like just a hermetically sealed anus is, I think the best way to go these days.
So, every little boy's dream.
Going back to gardening.
Yes.
And using your nail clippers for weeding.
I think that's great. I think more people need that kind of activity in their life. I think more people need something that they can focus on for long periods of time and get some joy out of. I think the problem with today's world is that there's too much going on and too many distractions and not enough clipping grass with scissors. I can't do it because I live in Florida and going outside is the worst. So I just let the garden do whatever. And I'm thinking about getting a goat to just eat stuff. And that's sort of my solution. But hey, if I live
It's a win-win. The goat eats, and you get a get the yard clipped.
Can't exactly.
Greg, have you thought about getting a goat for your apartment?
Yeah, a few times I've thought about it, but didn't seem financially prudent. It just the goat market right now doesn't seem good. I'm gonna wait until prices go down.
Yeah. You're waiting for commodities.
There'll be a picture of one on the ceiling that we can look at.
It's like the goat's already been up on the ceiling and ate everything that was there.
I think there's a subreddit that's working on the problem of the goat market, Greg. So pretty soon, I think you'll get a goat for cheap.
Bezos is stepping down from Amazon. Maybe he'll do something in the goat market.
Maybe.
And he'll screw over lots of people.
Was his plan, actually, was to get into goats. Oh, before I forget, I believe that you and I have something in common, Leland. Back in during the early months of the pandemic, I think both of us got booted off of Facebook for saying things that somebody didn't appreciate. So I know what mine was, which was I had made the suggestion that Trump was attempting to start a civil war because he wanted people to remember him like Lincoln.
That comment's aged pretty well if you think about it.
Apparently, I was a little bit prescient back then.
Yeah.
And then I basically lost my Facebook account. What was it that you got? Because I know there was this whole thing that they were writing articles about you being pissed off at Facebook for something.
Well, yeah. I mean, on average, I'm usually kicked off of Facebook about 150 days a year. I get blocked constantly by them. But the last thing I posted was just a question. And all I said was, what could have happened in Mitch McConnell's life to have made him such a vile and horrid creature? And within within 10 seconds, they came on and said I was creating hate and bullying and blocked me for another 30 days at that point.
Usually my bullying Mitch McConnell? Well, that's...
How do you bully a turtle? I mean, really?
You take its box away.
I'm kicking you off this podcast, Brendan. That's hateful.
There's aspects of Facebook that have been very beneficial to me, and I appreciate some of the connections I've made and different things. But there's also a real insidious side to it that just really eats at me, and I get really pissed off. And to me, I'm not going to go down without a fight. So I'm constantly being confronted. I get death threats on Facebook from people that go, "We know your touring schedule. We're going to come get you."
Why?
And I go,
"Why?"
Because they're generally right-wing zealots, and I post a lot of, but sometimes I respond and I go, "Yeah, you're sitting in your basement in your jammies now. Your mom just brought you Ovaltine, and you're jerking off to some crap video game. Come get me." And then I never hear from them again.
I'm just curious what video games they're jerking off to. Do you think it would be like Mortal Kombat or like Call of Duty? Is it those guy type of guys? You think?
Dig Dug.
I think it was Midnight Cowboy.
Pac-Man.
Frogger.
Grand Theft Auto. No, I don't know.
Oh, no. No, maybe it's something with goats.
Oh, it's a goat game. Yeah. No,
it's
they're
the
definitely...
goat game.
Maybe. Is there Goat Busters?
I think there's goat fuckers, something. I don't know.
Both of those games are just sad. And in terms of the jokes for our podcast, they're perfect. But, and I totally lost my train of thought because I was going somewhere. Then Brendan, unfortunately, sometimes we wind up getting into bestiality on this show. And it's purely
I'm not. I'm just saying these people that would look at Leland and make a death threat are obvious goat fuckers. That's all I'm saying.
Obviously.
So that means that Greg cannot get one for his apartment because then he would be at risk.
I would be tempted to be a goat fucker. There'd be the temptation there.
Now, see, Greg is taking us there. It wasn't me.
Oh, no.
He can afford to because there's no visual. We're only looking at lighting.
I mean, I could be fucking a goat right now.
He might be tied up somewhere.
With a ball gag in my mouth.
There we go. And let me join in here.
Yeah. Oh. Let's all just do pictures of our ceiling. And there's the door.
That's quite a ceiling.
That's a finger over there.
That's impressive. What
that's a stairwell or something. Yeah.
Brendan, in case you didn't know, Andrew Yang did not win the nomination. I saw the sign on your wall there.
Don't care. Should have. If you know, it was him, and then it was Bernie, and then we got a guy that's, you know, practically, you know, losing it. I'm sorry.
Where in Florida are you?
I'm in Tampa.
The ass crack of Florida.
Yeah, I'm in the Tampa area. So I'm in Clearwater, which is on the beach side by the Gulf.
Yeah. No, I was just curious because we would spend a lot of time because when we were working with Phil Collins and rehearsing, he lived in Miami. So I was just wondering what part of.
Oh, yeah. No. I live in the central weird part where it's like South Pinellas County, where I live, is like very Democratic. And then you drive 30 miles north and there's Proud Boy rallies. And it's a weird. And I'm somewhere in the middle of all of that.
Yeah. Cool.
The odd thing is that Greg and I both hearken from the East Coast, but we live on the West Coast, and Brendan is originally from the West Coast and lives on the East Coast. So it's
amazing the world we live in. I'm just flabbergasted every day at things like this. It makes getting up worthwhile.
You're talking hey, about Leland, you mentioned having the Greg talk cooler. About goat fucking?
Oh. No.
You mentioned the wrecking crew.
I'm flabbergasted earlier. Also.
I'm flabbergasted.
Let's talk about the goat fucking for a minute. I wanted to ask Leland, I saw that Wrecking Crew movie, loved it, and was so amazed that these session musicians would come up with these beloved parts of the song that you were like, that wasn't even there. Do you have any particular proud line you made up where they just came in with three chords and you said, hey, let's start the song this way?
Oh, I mean, there's been many, many of those over the years. Songs like Doctor My Eyes with Jackson Brown and
That opening. I know what you're talking about. I love the bass line in that.
James Taylor or Spectrum with Billy Cobham. A lot of times the bass line becomes very iconic within a song, and that's the thing that people remember. And Carol Kay and the Wrecking Crew was really gifted at that. And Joe Osborne, too. They were the two main bass players out of the Wrecking Crew. Created some absolutely amazing bass lines that defined the songs that they played on. Mm-hmm. You're always looking for that. You're not trying to impose yourself on the song, but you're trying to find something that'll just lift it, that extra space. Yeah.
Would you say, which one are you like particularly proud of, where you think, I really made the song on this with my bass?
Well, when people write to me all the time, bass players and stuff, they really love Doctor My Eyes and Smiling Face, Jackson Brown and James Taylor. Those, you know, for some reason, those resonated with bass players. But I've been really blessed to work in a ton of different genres. So there's different things within all kinds of different styles of music that I've been involved with that I appreciate the recognition for it, because you know I do the best I can every time I whip it out.
That's
I feel the same way.
I'm actually gonna put that on one of those inspirational quote things and put that on Facebook, you know, because I have a question. Because you've worked in so many different musical genres and styles, which was for you the most, I don't know, alien or uncomfortable, or you really, it took you a minute to wrap your head around what?
That'd be Air Supply.
I don't even consider that a genre.
If Air Supply, if any of the members of Air Supply are listening, you know, sorry.
Yeah, you shouldn't be listening if you're in Air Supply. I like how Leland's frozen, his hand is stuck on his beard. This is kind of like what happens occasionally with Greg. We're just a freezing. There he's back. Okay, good.
Am I frozen?
Not anymore. A great pose, though. It was like just you were pondering the world.
Yeah, I keep getting a little sign that says your internet is unstable. My internet is total crap where I am, and it just drives me crazy. And I keep trying to get it resolved, and it just doesn't get resolved.
Do you have Ethernet connected to your laptop?
No, or? I'm on Wi-Fi where I am. I could take the computer downstairs and plug into the Ethernet, but if we're working, I'm not going to screw it up by moving.
Right.
But in terms of genres that maybe were harder to wrap my head around, every once in a while I get called to do like a rap or a hip hop record, which is generally, you know, machine bass. And sometimes I've been brought in where they say, do some things like around that bass just to give it a little bit more humanity.
Really? And, wow.
Which you know, it's a legitimate challenge, you know, to do those kind of things because there's already a defined part and you're trying to find something that can just kind of give it a little bit of schmutz on it.
Right.
So sometimes that's been, and it's not difficult, but it's a little out of the norm where if I'm doing jazz or country or metal or rock or whatever, that's pretty defined for me. And I know what to do when I get in there. But I still enjoy it. I love a challenge. So yeah. It's kind of cool to sit down and listen to some, and sometimes when I'm doing that, that's when I'll pull out like an octave divider and maybe my fretless and do some stuff that really doesn't sound as bass like that. It's more creating an atmosphere along with the machine bass that they've got.
Well, did you use something like that when you perform with Deepak Chopra?
Because
I saw that in your discography. I'm like, on what? Deepak Chopra.
His rap album?
And then it's Whispers. That's right.
Yeah.
Gangsta rap with Deepak Chopra.
Straight out of CNN.
Well, I ended up doing a whole bunch of projects over the years with people like Deepak. And there was a guy named Brian Bennett, who I did a bunch of albums with. And it was all these things that were like meditative things. And it's just interesting. The thing I've loved the most about what I've done in my career in it, where there have been times where you can be slightly jealous when I look at somebody like Flea, and really all he's ever had to do is Chili Peppers and make a shitload of money and just do those songs, even though Flea does lots of other things. I'm not denigrating him by, you know, like, you know, anybody that's in like a hit band and that's all they really need to do, where every time I go to work, I'm in a new band and I'm learning new material and creating new parts. So instead of having a repertoire of say 100 songs that your band's done and that's what you go on the road with, I've recorded on probably around 25,000 songs.
Wow. And
have to come up with parts for every one of those songs. So it's, you know, but there's a part of that to me that is so ultimately satisfying and been such an adventure. Plus, I've gotten to work with the greatest musicians in the world, and for that, I'll always be grateful.
Is there someone who you regret that you never got a chance to perform with?
Yeah, there's a few people like that. I've always been a huge Steve Winwood fan.
Okay.
I've never had to play with Winwood, you know, and it would be fun. For the most part, I don't have too many regrets. I mean, I hear people all the time that would be fun to play with, but you know, I don't want to be totally greedy. I want everybody to work, so it's, you know, it's kind of nice. I can't. But when I get when I had the chances, like when I would get called to work with like Joe Cocker, you know, and you walk in the room and there's Joe, and you're just going, "Fuck, that's Joe." And then he puts you put your headphones on and he sings one note, and you go, "Oh man, that's, you know, Willie Nelson, people like that." It's to me, I feel so fortunate. I got to do like B.B. King's 80th birthday album, and I spent, you know, a week sitting like 4 feet from B.B. King playing with him. And I'm just every day pinching myself, just going, man, how lucky am I to be in this room with, you know, somebody like this? It's very appreciative of.
Have you ever done classical, like gotten a stand-up bass and done session work for like classical type music?
Well, that's how I started, was playing classical upright.
Yes, but I mean professionally.
But when it came time, during the 70s, when my career actually started in 1970, when it really actually went into full bloom, all my work, everything I was called for was electric. And I had my upright at home, and it just sat there. I never really got any calls for it. Everything was, you know, pop and rock, and that's all they wanted was electric. So over the years, my chops just went down, and I kind of regret that I didn't just dig back in and really, you know, stay on top of it. But it's one of those things that when it comes time, when if I got called for one of those kind of dates, I have friends that are monstrously great upright players, and I would just say, call them. It'll be great. I could bullshit my way through it, but that's not what I like to do. So I would rather see somebody working who that's what they do best. And
you give a referral, like a doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a wonderful community, and I think it's great when we can share. I know my strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes I get called for things, and I just don't think it's exactly what I would be great at, but I have friends that I think would be spectacular at it. So I just tell the people, look, call them. You'll be much happier in the long run.
Well, I heard you refer to yourself once as a plumber, like you're a plumber of, I guess, a bass. So how does that apply?
Well, it's not so much a plumber. I'm hired help. You know, I'm not the artist. I'm the gardener, or I'm the plumber, or I'm the electrician. You know, when they're doing a record, you call the guys to come in and do it. And we're basically hourly workers. And that's what it is. You're not getting points on the records or any of that stuff. You're not vested on that level with it. So I've always kind of looked at myself as like a blue collar worker in this business. Like everybody, you know, people come up to me all the time and they say, oh, you played on that record. My God, that's one of my favorite records. I had no idea, kind of thing. We're more invisible in the business, in the same way the Wrecking Crew people were. People would listen to, you know, the Mamas and the Papas and the Beach Boys and Frank Sinatra and the Tijuana Brass and all these records, and not realize it was the same bunch of musicians playing on all those records.
It was like the Funk Brothers in Motown, right?
Yeah, well, all those things, you know, the guys that came out of Stax, the people that came out of Sun, there were, you know, these defined rhythm sections that did a lot of the work in those areas, and they were doing everybody's records, and people really didn't know who those guys were. They just knew who the artist and the song was.
Right.
So these various documentaries that were like highlighted these different session groups, I think that's helped you out a lot, probably giving you a little more recognition.
Well, what'll be interesting is to see how the documentary that's being made right now about our group turns out, and Denny Tedesco, who made the Wrecking Crew movie, is making the documentary about our group, The Immediate Family. And we were really moving fast with it, and then the pandemic hit and we had to slow down because so much of it involves interviews and things like that, and some live performance. So we've had to be far more methodical about the process, but hopefully by late summer, the documentary might be out. Because what we wanted to do was, we were going to be hitting all the, you know, Telluride and Sundance and all the film festivals with it, and the band would go and play at the screenings. And everything's, you know, I mean, like everything, it's all on hold right now. We've shifted from being the hare to being the tortoise. At this point, you know, we're still moving forward, but it's definitely more slow and methodical at this point.
Does the documentary have a title?
It's going to be called The Immediate Family, which is the name of our group. And the band, back in the early 70s, we ended up with a band called The Section, which was Russ Kunkel, Danny Korchmar, Craig Derge, and myself. And we played with James Taylor and Jackson Browne, and we had our own albums, and we would go on the road with those guys and open the shows and then play with them. But we were more of a rock fusion group. But these many years later, Danny Korchmar got offered a deal with a label called Vivid Records out of Japan, and to do a solo album. And when he came time to do the album, he ended up calling us, because we've all played together over all the decades and we've recorded on tons of projects together. So Cooch called me and Russ and Waddy Wachtel.
Cooch?
Danny Korchmar.
Okay. I was like, I didn't know they could use phones. Anyway, go ahead.
And
you've never heard of a talking cooch? Matt, you need to come to Florida. They got them all over the place down here.
All over. South Beach.
South Beach. There's a franchise, the Talking Cooch. It's, you know, it's a big thing.
I had no idea. Right next to the 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
It's adult toys. So when it came time for him to make his album, he called myself and Russ, and we happened to be in town the week that he wanted to work. And then Waddy was on the road with Stevie Nicks at that time, but he came back like 2 days before the end of the project. And Cooch had been working with another friend of ours, Steve Postel, out here in town, and they had done some pre-production work. And I had done like Steve's solo album like 10 years ago. And so when it came time to release the album, Danny ended up calling it Danny Korchmar and the Immediate Family, because he felt we were all immediate family. We're the closest music relationships in our lives are all together. And that's how the album was released in Japan. And now we're signed in the States with a label here. And we just dropped the Danny Korchmar part of it, because now we're signed as an act. So it's the Immediate Family. And we're
with Do you do all the songwriting? Do you write the songs? You guys all write the songs?
Yeah, it's all original material. The main writing is Cooch and Waddy and Postel, Steve Postel. I spent the past 2.5 years pretty much on the road with Phil Collins doing his Not Dead Yet tour. And so a lot of the work that we did for the album that's sitting in the can right now waiting to be released was written while I was gone on the road. And Russ has contributed, Kunkel has contributed to the writing too. I'm not much of a writer. I enjoy being involved in arranging and things like that. But we're really fortunate to have really great songwriters within the group. It was really funny. Like when we started gigging, we would tell people we're a cover band that only plays originals, which is really what we were, because Cooch wrote, you know, like Dirty Laundry, and all she wants to do is dance with Henley, and Machine Gun Kelly with James Taylor, and Waddy was involved. He co-wrote Werewolves of London with Warren Zevon, and, you know, all kinds of stuff. So the songwriting in the group is really, really strong. And we're doing, we've had this album that was supposed to be released in November, but because the pandemic, it's sitting waiting. So we've been releasing EPs and videos, and we'll probably try to get the album out with the documentary film, try to maybe work them together. And we're going to go to the studio, because the creative process doesn't end. And I think we're going to go ahead and make another album and release that at the end of the year or the beginning of next year. So, you know, we're in a holding pattern on certain things, but the creative process is ongoing daily.
No, I mean, a lot of your audience is kind of in a hostage situation anyway, where I think it would be easier to reach them if you put out a lot of your different products, or maybe as like teasing them, I suppose, along the way.
Yeah, well, what we're doing is building the brand, because, you know, the last gig we actually played was a thing called the Rock Legends Cruise in last February, and it was from Fort Lauderdale to Grand Cayman and back, and it's like Roger Daltrey and Nancy Wilson and Mark Farner, all these different acts on it. And people would see us walking around the ship and they go, "What are you guys doing here?" And we'd say, "Well, we're playing." And they said, "Well, what band are you playing with?" And we said, "Well, we're the Immediate Family." And people had seen the name Immediate Family, had no idea that it was us on it. And by the time the cruise ended, normally on those kind of cruises, they skip a couple of years before inviting you back, because they try to do turnovers in the artists that come, because generally the people that come on these cruises book like the next 5 cruises kind of thing. That's their thing, is going on these. And when the cruise ended, the people who were in charge of it said, "Man, you guys were so popular. Would you come back next year?" And we were supposed to be going out in February this month with doing the cruise again, but needless to say, that's been canceled till next year. You know, at least. I mean, everything's in a holding pattern at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, I was absolutely furious when, like, Sammy Hagar and Clapton and some of these people have been saying, oh, we got to open up those concerts again. And I'm sitting here going, fuck you. You know, this is bullshit. Because who's the safest person if you did a concert like that? You. You know, you would be coddled and taken to your spot on stage and then taken away. And man, what about the audience that's packed like sardines, you know, and not masked and all? You know?
Right.
It's not a note I would ever play that's worth somebody's life. And so it's going to be a while before we see live music again. I mean, they really have to focus on getting the population healthy.
Yeah, those cruise ships are like Petri dishes for COVID.
Oh, yeah. It's ridiculous for any of that stuff. But almost even a small club, and then, you know, the viability of a club that, say, holds 100 people, but they're only going to let 20 in. I mean, it's really we have to be smart about this and know that this is going to hurt. I'm just praying for the small venues that they can survive this. You know, big venues, arenas, all that stuff, they're bringing in, you know, crowdless basketball and different sports and stuff, you know, and stadiums are, you know, playing football and all that with cardboard cutouts of people in the stands. And
well, what Brendan is, it's basically like COVID never happened over there in Florida. It's like it's just a free for all. Whereas here in Portland, Oregon area, restaurants are just shutting down.
That's a little unfair.
Well, that's how you described it.
I'm not saying it's completely free for all, but it's definitely less restrictive here than in other places.
Did you say you went to a monster truck rally last week?
Oh yeah, you know me. I'm a big monster truck rally guy, and I just went through the crowd, wiping my nose on the back of everyone's neck as a sign of solidarity against the oppressive, shape-shifting lizard people.
The hoax. You're speaking truth to power, man.
Yeah, I think if you're going to go there, really just go there. You know, a lot of, you know, you're just hawking some greenies. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of lick your palm and then high five everybody.
I think hawking some greenies, wasn't that done at like Grateful Dead concerts, though?
They were one of my favorite. They and Strawberry Alarm Clock were two of my favorite bands. You know,
interesting combination of bands to be your favorite. Those two, they're quite different. Yeah.
Well, I'm like a cross dresser when it comes to music. You know, just
that's okay. Yeah, you know,
I'm just a cross dresser when it comes to dressing.
What?
I'm a cross dresser when it comes to dressing.
Well, you dress like either hobo chic or tramp chic, Greg. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but sometimes it's a little more feminine. I have a little flourish that's more feminine.
You have like frays in the hefty bag that you're wearing as a skirt?
Yeah, exactly.
I assume that cross-dressing meant he was just angry when he got dressed.
No, it's just like everything that he wears is shaped like a cross.
Oh, okay.
I kind of am cross-dressing in Portland because I have to put on so many layers every morning. It's just chore. It's like, oh, here's my third sweater. It takes me 5 minutes to get dressed for work.
Why do you have to have so many clothes on?
Because I walk to work in the cold. It's freezing. So I have to have like two sweaters under my jacket and an unthermal shirt under my T-shirt.
So do you get undressed when you get to work?
No. Well, I take my jacket off.
Okay. But, oh, you know what? I realized we never discussed who our client was for today. So we have legendary Leland Sklar as our guest counsel. But our client was, you know, I totally forgot to mention, is Furry Faces and Flipping Fingers, which is essentially, you know, dealing with facial hair and flipping people off. And the reason this comes from is obviously, you know, Leland's face is hardly seen due to a mass of fur. You know, I think if you could find a way to have the beard up over your head all the time, that would be perfect.
If I do a handstand, I look like Don King.
It's like an aging cousin it. But,
yeah, exactly.
But, you know, facial hair over the centuries, I think it's been an interesting phenomena, you know, where you have There came a point in civilization where people said, okay, it's time to shave these things off, you know, that we don't want these things growing on our faces anymore for whatever reason. Now, Leland, you've made a choice of not having shaved since I believe you were in high school. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've cut it all the time, but last time I was clean shaven was when they gave me my high school diploma.
Right. And so how come since then you've never shaved it all off?
Lazy. Yeah.
You know, the last thing I think is a term to describe you would be the term lazy.
Yeah.
Considering no, you probably, clip grass with fingernail clippers.
Yeah, but I keep my beard out of the way. I've gone in for estimates, but that's about as far as it got.
An estimate to get rid of the beard.
Estimate? Oh, God.
Yeah. Have you done anything fancy with it? Have you done like any like waxing or treatments or anything like that?
When I first started growing a beard, I pulled and all that, but that was just so much effort all the time. I finally just came in one day and just clipped the ends off of that. But for the most part, no, I always get these like you're out there, you know, on the road or something. You always get like some girl comes up and goes, man, can I like cornrow your beard? Can I put beads in it? And I go, get your hands away from me.
I imagine that it influences your diet a lot.
Leland, I think you're missing. I think cornrow, I think there's a different, I think they're trying to say something different to you.
Is that kind of cornhole?
It's got nothing to do with goats, does it?
No, it has nothing to do with goats. Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Just confirm. I want to
cornhole your beard is a southern slang expression for
what?
For talking cooches.
Yeah, you know? No, that's when you get your ride to the PTA meeting.
So I imagine having that beard though, Leland, must like really like influence your diet. Like there's probably food you can't even eat. Messy sandwiches.
Really. You mean like curry?
Oh no, I mean to me it's all you're just careful and then you have a handy wipe handy, and that's also nice because you can kind of tuck away something back in here and you know snack for later on. It was Trading Places when Aykroyd was dressed as Santa Claus and he was at that banquet and he took a big piece of salmon and he Subway afterwards all hammered pulling the salmon out of his beard and eating it, and the people in the cart are just like losing it watching him. You can use it for a variety of things.
Yeah, I
had a lengthy beard earlier this year, not quite the same as yours, but I was just growing it out for the pandemic, and you know I was just getting the whole old prospector vibe at that stage, and my wife decided that she likes me with a beard but not that beard. And I would have liked to have grown mine out as yours, but yours is still kind of, it looks kempt, even though it's long. You know, it looks like you treat it maybe with oils, perhaps, or
rub it with really good goat oil that you can get.
Freshly squeezed goat oil?
There's Himalayan goats.
So it's like goat lube.
Goat lube.
Yeah.
Well, that's something different, Greg, but I mean, it's a goat-related product, but not for use on a goat. Is that what you're talking about?
I was talking about the goat lube that I use when I...
Oh, yeah, we're talking about something different.
When I buy my goat.
Greatest of all time, you mean? Goat? That goat?
Yes.
Or Grammy, right. Grammy, Oscar, Tony, and something begins with the letter A. I don't know what that one would be. I was almost there though. Grammy, Oscar, I think it's E. What is EGOT? That's the thing I was trying to think of. All right, that's completely different from a goat.
And the other half of our client is Leland. I wanted to ask you: is there any artist you work with? And I don't know if you want to tell tales out of school that you wanted to flip off. That you were like this guy.
Yeah, like Don.
What
Henley.
A nightmare.
Air supply.
Occasionally, you know, it would have been too cheap to flip them off. It was too expensive.
Yeah.
Well, he had to make love out of nothing at all, guys.
I mean, I've worked with a few pant loads, you know, in this career, and it just, you know, It happens, and I just move on. But all it does is warn me that if they ever call again, say no. But I don't flip them off. Because for me, the flipping off gesture is always an act of kindness, and that's why the book happened.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if Brendan is familiar with the book. So the book he's talking about is a coffee table book called...
No, yeah, I'm familiar.
Oh, you are? Okay. Just you have this pensive look to your face.
I don't know of this book. Tell me about this book. I'd like to hear about it.
Okay, I'll give you a synopsis. When we were on tour in 2004 with Phil Collins, there was talk that Phil was going to retire at the end of the tour. I had a bass tech named Steve Chinner Winstead. And during the course of the tour, hearing that Phil was going to retire, I thought, I may never see a lot of these people again, because our crew was from all over the world, Europe and the States. And so I thought, I'm going to just take a picture of everybody and make a little folder for myself, for my memories. And at the end of the tour, the first person I went up to was my bass tech, Steve. He was at his laptop. And I said, hey, Steve, give me a smile. And instead of that, he gave me the finger. And I took the picture and I looked at it and I went, oh, this is pretty cool. So I went and got Phil and his manager, everybody in the band, everybody in the crew, truck drivers, caterers, had about 130 pictures or so of people flipping me off.
So this was just and like a mood thing, and it just became, it snowballed.
Yeah. And then after that, I went on the road with Toto and ended up doing the same thing with those guys. And it took on a life of its own. And at this point, I have over 12,000 photographs of everybody imaginable, from the man on the street to Charlie Watts and Jeff Beck and James Taylor, and you kind of name it, sports people, and all giving me the finger. And during the pandemic, I thought, if I was ever going to do a book, which people have bugged me about forever, now's the time. And I got together with a friend who has a company called Art Alliance. His nickname is Blue, and this is what he does. And we got together and culled through the pictures and picked 6,000 of them and put together this 6-pound amazing coffee table book. I mean, if you want, I can show you real quick.
It's, please do.
Yeah.
6 pounds a book.
It is a big ass
book. That's a lot of beard.
That's a lot of book.
So here's the book.
Everybody loves him. That's the name of your autobiography, Greg.
And then you turn it over, and there's
nice. And
it's just,
wow.
It's just
nice old ladies flipping you the bird. I love it.
Yeah, I've got a nun in here flipping me off.
Whoa!
There's Hans Peter and his family. He owns Warwick Instruments in Germany.
Oh, the bass manufacturer.
Yeah, the bass manufacturers. Let me see what I got here. Hold on one sec.
That's a lot of pictures of people flipping. You've made so many people happy.
Yeah, there's Flea.
Nice.
And it's just, the thing is, a big book. The cover's padded on it. It's a soft cover. It's a hard cover, but with padding on it. Mm-hmm. And
so if you hit somebody with it, it's not so bad.
Yeah, but it's still going to hurt a lot.
Right.
But and I put together, I've had this because people kept asking me, but like, who's in this book and stuff? And so I can give you a real quick little thing. I got like Phil Collins, Jackson Browne, Chris Squire.
Chris Squire Jane passed away, so yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, Jane Seymour, Graham Nash, the director Haskell Wexler, Paul Williams, Bonnie Raitt, Jack Nicholson. Brian Ferry, Stephen Bishop. I mean, there's like, this is just a little list of some of the people that are in the book.
You got so. Brian wow. Ferry to flip you off? I heard he was a nice fellow.
Oh, well, these are all nice. There's nothing adversarial about these fingers. It's not like a fuck you finger. It's not. I always tell people, I said, look, if you're driving down the freeway and there's a carload of guys next to you screaming at you, giving you the finger, it may not be a good situation. This stuff in here, the first page in the book is all babies giving the finger. So you know,
how do you get the baby?
They don't know yet, but they're just doing. It's just, you know, there's a finite amount of ways. Like when Jack Black gave me the finger, he said you want balls or no balls, on it. But the thing with the book to me is this is what I look at is people's faces when you say, give me the finger. And all of a sudden you get the entire gamut of human emotion of it, from the most, you know, people going like this to yeah kind of stuff. And everybody who's gotten the book so far absolutely loves it. And
did the nun do that? Did the nun do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the most unusual finger you saw amongst all of the photographs that you took?
Well, I got some. Actually, one of the weirdest ones in there is there was when we played Madison Square Garden with Phil Collins, one of the security guards there, his arm ceased to develop past his elbow. It was like just a nub, but out of the middle of that nub was a tiny little bit of remnant of a finger. So he's going like this with this little tiny nub of a finger sticking out.
Wow.
There was and then there was some like really great arthritic hands, you know, people, you know, just really bent and Rudy Sarzo, the bass player with Quiet Riot and Ozzy and stuff. He's got like really funny jointing. So he did it sideways and his finger like almost looks like a ladder that's, you know, being broken.
Did anyone refuse you? Like, was anyone too proper and like, oh, I can't do that. I could never do that.
I had out of the 12,000 like pictures.
Queen Elizabeth.
She would have done it in a second.
she's nasty, like, that one.
Well, I mean, you know, we were talking goats and we just got distracted.
Always go back to the goats.
No, I had out of the 12,000 photographs, I had about 25 people say no to it, you know, and it was usually some bullshit like, well, it's against my religion. And I go, well, that's why I'm an atheist, you know. To that.
Mitch McConnell refused.
Well, the one thing I did not do is there's not one politician in the book. And I had a lot of opportunities with them, and I just did not want to darken my doorstep. So.
Regardless of the side of the aisle they were on.
Doesn't matter. I didn't want to open that can of worms.
Good call.
I've got all kinds of everybody else. And I have people like Bernie Williams, who was a center fielder for the New York Yankees. And, you know, Scott Hamilton, the figure skater, and Sheryl Crow, and Yo-Yo Ma is in it. It's like
Wow. Humanity.
And it's a lot of years of just taking pictures. And I still have, 6,000 pictures I didn't use.
Wow.
So it's like the sequel,
is
that coming?
It's really, well, this was really a ton of hard work. So I'm not sure if I would do another one. Right at this point, I'm just working really hard fulfilling orders because I've done everything myself with the pandemic. I mean, I'm packing, I'm shipping, I'm doing everything. And I printed, I had 10,000 copies printed. So I've got a warehouse full of books. And
you don't have some intern you can abuse to do that?
No, not with COVID.
Oh.
See, that's the whole thing is with COVID, I don't want to be in harm's way and I don't want to put anybody in harm's way. So
right.
Pretty much. And the good thing was with the post office that's near my house, when I would have box loads of books, I would just go back to the loading dock. I didn't have to go into the post office and deal with anybody. So they would just, you know, ring me in and I could just back my truck up to the loading dock and fill some big, you know, containers with boxes of books. And then they would ship them at that point. So
do you have a room in your house that's just filled with all the books that you had published?
Or? No, I keep about a dozen boxes of books in my garage. And then there's a lock-in store near me that I've got a big room in, and it's just packed with boxes. And I just go over and stock up. But I'm looking for distribution in Japan, in Europe, in Scandinavia right now.
Well, the finger is pretty ubiquitous. I mean,
it's international.
Yeah.
And certain places are different. Like if you went to Brazil and did that, it doesn't mean anything. But if you did that, that's that in Brazil. So you got to be careful in different cultures because different gestures mean different things that we know about.
About intercourse to some degree. Like that's kind of how the finger came about. It was, you know, ancient times that was like a symbol of getting it on.
Yeah.
And it's weird how these things become bad over time though. You know, it's like you've got these symbols that, or even words like the word fuck for that matter. They just symbolize having sex, but then somewhere along the line, somebody said, oh no, that's a bad thing. You can't talk about that.
Because sex is bad.
Yes.
Well,
for me, usually.
It was probably a goat herder that really started that whole.
Oh, no. The goat herder
theme.
Conspiracy goes all the way back. You think about a lot of the ancient texts. Who was really behind a lot of it?
Beowulf.
A goat herder.
Yeah. I mean, they found goats in Tutankhamun's tomb.
Need I say more? Satan is represented as a
goat.
Yeah.
Goat.
Yeah.
Cloven hooves.
You're onto something.
Have fingers, but not hooves, though.
Cloven Hooves would be a great band name.
I think it probably is a band name somewhere.
Yeah, it's probably a Christian band. You know, it's like, you know, somebody signed to Sparrow or Word Records at this point.
Did you ever play on a Christian rock album?
Lots of them. I did a lot of records with Stephen Curtis Chapman, Second Chapter of Acts, Twilight of Paris, Avalon, Steve Camp.
Did they try to convert you while you were in the studio?
I think they hired me to try to heal me, and by the time I left, they were all like devil worshipers.
They were all questioning their beliefs, like maybe we've been wrong all our lives.
Yeah, and just so you know, Cloven Hoof was the name of a band in England. It was a heavy metal band that was active from 1979 to 1990, and then they
isn't the internet fantastic?
It is. It's like magic at your fingertips, as well as hell at the same time. You know, there's so many good things. And then
Don't look up goat.
Yeah. Right below that, it has Copulation of Cloven Hooves by Slut Vomit. So, I don't know which one is the band.
There's a band you ought to check out called Rock Bitch.
Oh, I like the name.
Oh, man. Pull up a video of them. It's unbelievable. I was on tour in Europe, and our bus driver had been driving them around, and he had a video of one of their concerts.
Oh, they perform nude and they incorporate sexual acts and pagan rituals into their performances. And mostly female metal band.
Yeah.
Mm.
Sign me up.
That's definitely, you know, going beyond, above and beyond.
There's no livestock involved, but that's so that they do have places to go yet.
Boring.
Yeah.
I'm not interested anymore.
They drew band members from a matriarchal, polyamorous, pagan, feminist community.
Wow.
Well, all right.
Oh, my.
The internet is a wonderful
thing. Polyamorous, pagan, feminist.
Matriarchal.
I love how the kids today just go crazy with the adjectives. It's just amazing to me how
they're so little.
But that was from 1984, Brendan.
See, well,
it wasn't kids today. It was kids of our day.
They were overachievers, those ones.
Yeah, they were prescient.
They were setting the stage for the myriad of definitions of people that we now have today.
There are so many people we have today.
I can't even follow it anymore.
No. It's but
I'm happy to have them all. But
I believe you've had most of them.
You can pick and choose as you please because there's so much available.
Right.
You know, it's not just the old weird guy down at the end of the block who invites you over for cupcakes and then has his way with you.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
I know that guy. I kind of miss him.
You are that guy, Greg.
I'm trying, but I can't make cupcakes very well.
I was going to say, if you can make cupcakes.
I don't know how to bake. I just offer Reese's peanut butter cups to the children.
Oh, I'm there.
And urinal cakes. You basically take Reese's cups, put it on a urinal cake. You've got it made, Greg.
Yeah, James Taylor in concert, when he used to introduce me sometimes, he goes, the man with the personality of a urinal cake.
Wow.
At least you were friends.
That's not very nice.
Yeah, he would say that, or the man behind the Shroud of Turin.
That one I get. I get that. I don't get the urinal cake thing, but okay.
Well, we'd have to get to know Leland more, I think.
Yeah.
Leland, are you familiar with the meanings of your names? I'm assuming you are.
You mean Sklar, you mean?
Well, both Leland and Sklar. They have very specific names.
That side of my family came from Russia, but apparently it has the same meaning in Scandinavia too, which means glass blower. And it was interesting. One of the people I tour with is Judith Owen, and she's married to Harry Shearer from Spinal Tap. And,
oh, no kidding. Okay.
Wow.
And we were doing a BBC radio show back in England, and the girl who was interviewing us had no clue who the hell we were or anything. She was just thrown in there. And so to be interesting, she said to me, she says, "Oh, Sklar, that's an interesting name. What does it mean?" And I said, "It means glass blower." And she goes, "Well, have you ever blown any glass before? And I said, "Only Philip." Judith ended up on the floor, and this girl looked like a goat in the headlights. I mean, she had no clue what I had just said. But it's interesting because I've had people talk to me from Scandinavian countries, and they say, "Oh, Sklar here means glassblower." So it's interesting that it's been Leland. I'm not sure what Leland means.
Well, Leland, in case you wanted to know, is Old English origin, and it is one who lives by unceded land or fallow land. So you could basically be a glassmaker on an unceded land, basically near a plot of dirt, I think.
Yeah. But I would say
the urinal cake.
And it's also similar to Leslie. It's used for women as well, Leland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not just for men.
So not just for men anymore.
It's perfect for this era that we live in.
Yeah, weird thing to name someone. Like,
what is
this? Is how we're going to name someone? The guy who lives near the fallow land that defines who he is.
Yeah, there's nothing like looking at a newborn baby and thinking of dirt.
You live by the dirt, and so you shall be named. Well, people were weird back then, you know. It's like, who knows what was going through their crazy pagan heads?
Maybe that's what Kunta Kinte meant in African.
It was Leland.
No, I don't think so.
One who is born near unfallow land.
No, it's fallow land. Great, yeah, right.
Well, they didn't have the fallow. They didn't have Netflix or anything, so they had to find their own entertainment.
Yeah,
that's right.
So your parents never told you, like, this is why we decided to call you this?
They never spoke to me, ever.
They just did animal noises? They just, like, made parrot sounds to you?
And they just showed me the piano and pointed, and then I left. I was
Enjoy gone. Your life, kid.
Yeah, all yours.
Here's a piano.
Were you an only child?
No, I have a sister 2 years younger than me.
Okay.
Lives up in Montana.
By like some unceded land?
A lot of unceded land. they got about 100 acres up there.
Oh, nice. That was just in Montana over the summer.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It was like one of the places I could go where I was. It had a lower death count for COVID than here. So it was safe to like try and hit some national parks during the pandemic.
It's scary shit, man. It's unbelievable, but she's doing great. I did my live stream with my YouTube channel yesterday, and she came on it and was threw in a couple of comments, so I was happy for that.
What's the name of your YouTube channel for our listeners, our three people who listen to us?
Okay, it's just go to YouTube and pull up Leland Sklar channel. And I've done, since the pandemic began, I've done at least one video every single day. I've got about 430 videos up, and it went from like zero to, I've got 146,000 followers now on it. So it's been going great. I do two live streams a month, and yesterday's was 2.5 hours of just sitting and talking to people and the chat window roaring along, and they've become a remarkable community of, I'm more of a facilitator at this point.
I think you'll probably get like one more subscriber from being on our show.
I hope so. Yeah. Or at least maybe somebody that has goats would be really great.
I will subscribe and represent the goat community on the channel.
Me too.
I did go to your YouTube channel and I was like super impressed. I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like just the amount of content, because that's not necessarily easy to crank out, but I guess for you, it's pretty easy.
It's a real challenge every day. Like today, I, I talked about working with Trisha Yearwood and played some songs that I recorded with Trisha Yearwood and talked about all the players on that. And the other day I talked about Brian Wilson and Van Dyke Parks. And, you know, I just dig through my discography and I find projects I work on and I play along with a lot of them. And because that's how the whole channel started, was I came off of Phil Collins's tour. And some bass players wrote to me and they said, you know, we saw the concert, but a lot of our concerts were like stadiums and things like that. And they said, you know, we could hear really good because we have a great front of house mixer, but they said we couldn't hear all the details. So what I ended up doing was getting a board mix of one of our shows from the one we did in Adelaide, Australia. And I plugged in a little Bose speaker into my laptop and I've got an amp on the floor here next to me. And so what I did was I started with the first song of the show, played that song, but played bass over it so you could hear the bass part on top of it. And by the third song, the third day, people started going, "We love your YouTube channel." And I'm going, "What are you talking about?" And going, "Oh no, you know, the thing," I had no idea I was doing a YouTube channel. And it, it all of a sudden, you know, I got through a lot of Phil stuff. Then I was doing everything from Billy Cobham to Jackson to you name it. So every day I look up, find another song, and I'll quickly relearn it and show the bass parts on it and along with it and tell stories. Or I, at this point, it's fun just to play the songs and sit here and listen with the people. But it's become a really great community during this time of lockdown where people are out of touch with people. This has really become a real unit. And on Saturday, I do one-on-one Skype and FaceTime. So I've got a whole day filled with people that signed on for that, where I sit for like 15 minutes with each person and just shoot the shit with them.
Well, whatever you do, don't do any recreations of Don Henley stuff on your YouTube channel.
Oh, no, I've been down that road already.
Okay, because I'm saying they will. I had a YouTube channel. I had over 2,000 videos of it. It was like all new content. Got totally shut down specifically because of the Eagles.
Yeah, no.
Really? Henley.
Yeah.
But the other day I did a duets album with Reba McEntire, and one of the duets was with Henley, and that stayed on because it's Reba's call. But I remember I did a song called Waterfall with Carly Simon, and when I put that up, Warner's immediately blocked it and pissed me off so much that I called Carly and I told her, and she was pissed off, called her manager who called Warner Brothers, and he made them unblock it.
Jeez.
Wow.
The fact that you guys are on these things and you get blocked too, it just boggles my mind. You know, that
it's bullshit. And the thing that makes zero sense to me is the fact that I can't monetize any of it. It's all copyright protected, so I'm not making any money. It would only help the label and the artist, because so many of the things I've put up, people said, "I had no idea about that record. I'm going to go out and order it and I'm going to buy it." And you know, this is to benefit them. Why the hell would you block it? I just don't understand it.
Yeah, all the videos I had were basically of karaoke singers. So it's like, and it was all of the videos I put up were all demonetized to start with. I never wanted any money from them, you know? And it was
that's not why I got into it. I got into it just because it gave me something to look forward to every day when everything else I was supposed to be doing got shut down.
Yeah.
So it's given me a reason to share and
so we could flip off the man right now, the man at the publishing companies.
You're like a musical sharecropper, basically. You got nothing. You got no rights.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. But I didn't want them either. You know, and that's the thing is I'm just really enjoying the thing that evolved out of this. I think it's become very important. So between the book, the YouTube channel, and our band, I've been busier than I've ever been during this period. I'm not making shit money, but I'm busy and I feel engaged and creative. And that to me, that's enough at this point.
Yeah, especially considering how long and extensive your career has been. I think you've had an amazing, amazing career. And the fact that you're still going strong is a testament to obviously your abilities. So you must know a little bit of what you're doing. I know you've got a meeting coming up in the next few minutes.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get you in here. I'm teaching. I'm doing a Zoom college course that I was asked to do. I did a high school, what is today, Wednesday, Monday, I did a high school, Agoura High School, for one of the classes, and I sat and talked to them for an hour and answered questions, and now this is Stanford University or something. They've asked me to come and speak for to a class there. So
wow.
Well, it's been so an absolute it's been an absolute honor to have you on. We really appreciate you taking time out of your day.
It's really, yeah, it's really been great.
I'll never look at a goat the same way. Your faces and ceiling will come to my mind the minute I see a goat.
And if you do look at a goat a certain way, make sure you take a picture of it as well.
Yes.
You know, make sure you have goat oil.
Well, it's kind of like the shepherd out in the field where he's counting his goats and he's going, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7. Sad stuff. Sad stuff. Where's the symbol? Oh, hey, wait, I got one here. Hold on.
Oh, by the way, everybody, go to his website. It's www.lelandsklarsbeard.com to buy his book. You can actually get it signed by Leland personally.
Yeah, there's an option for signed personalized.
And ask for the goat. I think we need that sound effect to end the episode.
Wait, I just need to show Leland something.
Oh man, we are so connected.
All I have is this paper towel that I was wiping my nose with earlier. Yeah.
I think this is one of my favorite ones here.
I have this.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a. What do we got here? Okay, kids.
All right, we should probably just say thanks, Maria.
Thanks, Maria.
Thanks, Maria.
Maria. Thank you, Leland. Really, it was great having you.
If I ever need a law firm, you are absolutely the people I will not come to.
Yeah, don't. We don't know what the hell we're talking about.
Any more trouble with Facebook or YouTube, you call us. We'll represent you.
Yeah.
We're on it.
This has been the Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker Computer Telecast, where any advice has been designed purely for amusement and deep-sea diving. Please take a candy on your way out, pet the lion tamer, and subscribe to this computer telecast if you know it's good for you. The Law Offices of Quibble, Squabble, and Bicker deny all culpability in today's events and are not to be confused with real law offices that have a secretary and books and stuff. Thank you all. Have a good day.